Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. And sitting across from me, still, is somebody who's lived with the project, who had it, found it, gosh, like, was it almost 15 years ago you found it, Mario?
It was more like 10, yeah, 8 to 10, somewhere in there.
Well, the project we're talking about is the film Diary of a Teenage Girl. It's writer, director, adapter, Marielle Heller, sitting across from me. First of all, thanks so much for being here.
I'm so pleased to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. I'm so happy this movie got made. And for maybe the 1,000th time, you get to tell the audience what the movie's about.
So it's based on a graphic novel called The Diary of a Teenage Girl, and it's about a 15-year-old girl growing up in the 70s in San Francisco with a pretty loose mom, and she's an aspiring cartoonist, and she's just started an affair with her mother's boyfriend.
And we should say her mom is played by Kristen Wiig.
Yes.
And the boyfriend's Alexander Sarsgaard. And your star,
Belle Powley, who's incredible, who's getting so much love and attention for this part, which makes me so happy because she just gives an incredible performance.
Well, first thing I thought when I saw the movie was, A, she looks like you. B, she looks like all the drawings by Eileen Kaminsky. And C, you all have these kind of anime-like eyes, these big sort of bright, brimming with eagerness cartoon
yes,
eyes
Phoebe.
Almost.
Yeah, Phoebe Gleckner, who wrote the book. She and Phoebe really do look a lot alike.
Does she look like Phoebe?
Yeah, they do. They have these very intense big eyes.
As
do I. I know. It's true. It's true.
But it's almost because so much of the movie lives in her eyes anyway.
Yes.
And I wonder if that was something you were looking for in the casting.
It definitely was. I didn't try to cast a character who looked exactly like the drawings from the graphic novel necessarily, but I definitely had it in my head. And there was something about finding an actress who had this open face that you could read everything into, that you could look in her eyes and feel everything she was experiencing, this sort of real earnestness. Because I think a lot of times you see teenage girls in movies and they're really sarcastic and closed off.
Yeah, and their eyes are almost kind of hooded.
Yeah, and that was not what I wanted at all. I wanted this character to be more like how I felt like I was when I was a teenager, which was really earnest, really dramatic, experiencing life in extremes. Everything was like these extreme emotions, up and down, you know, from one minute to the next. You're in love, you're devastated, whatever it is.
Well, that's what it is. It's almost like a series of different movies. And one of the things I think is so compelling about it is that, unlike so many of the teenage protagonists we see in movies, especially girls, she's eager for experience. Actually, the way it makes it different, I think, from the graphic novel.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think I found in the graphic novel her to be a really active character and that it was so much from her perspective. I think just having a story where we're telling it from the teenager's perspective rather than a grown-up perspective, kind of trying to add on this moral lesson or tell the story from that perspective. I think that alone feels different to me.
But I also think that hunger for experience, which
yes.
is rather than being active, I mean, she's really like, that's where it comes from. It's almost like a kind of emotional ambition for her, isn't it?
Absolutely. She's longing to be touched. She's longing for new experiences. She's longing to feel alive. She's had her first kind of taste of what it might be to be sexual or to be seen by a man in a certain way, and it makes her want to have more. And I found that to be something in the book that was sort of a revelation for me of, we always talk about boys being the ones who are interested in sex or who are thinking about sex, and teenage girls kind of get the lesson that you're not going to want to have sex. Boys are going to want to have sex with you, and you're going to have to withhold it until the moment you decide to bestow it upon somebody or something like that. And nobody tells you what happens if you're the one who wants to have sex. And it's confusing then if you're a teenage girl, because if you're having those thoughts or those feelings and you've never seen that in a movie, you've never seen that in a book about a teenage girl, you think, am I a boy? Like, what's wrong with me if I'm having these thoughts?
Or there's a sense of doom, because if there is a teenage girl who's sexually active, she's basically due for a comeuppance of some sort.
That's definitely the lesson we tend to get in movies, is she must be punished in some way.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, too, is that it's a 70s story told from a 21st century perspective where there really is no judgment about any of this.
Yeah, that was my intention, was to really tell the story from her perspective solely and to never step into the place of judgment.
And one of the things that I've read a lot of interviews and listened to a lot of them, the comedy doesn't ever get talked about. People are so busy talking about it. It's a tragic thing, this awful, and it is an awful circumstance, and it's about somebody finding her power. And for me, the most fascinating thing about the movie is that basically everybody, their idea of adulthood is attention.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. I think that's the thing that really separates it from the graphic novel. Mm. This idea that her mom and she basically want attention.
Yeah.
And that's what being a grown-up means, is to get attention.
Getting attention from men, getting attention from other people.
Again,
external validation. Yeah.
Which I thought was a really interesting way to choose to dramatize this. Mm. And I wonder where that came from for you, that idea of using that as kind of a fulcrum.
I was kind of thinking about her mother, the mother-daughter relationship I found to be really interesting. And in the script, I think I sort of developed it. It grew and changed as I was developing the script outside of the graphic novel. And
it really is a different thing.
It really is. I think it kind of called to be a slightly more fleshed out, how it played into the rest of the story kind of was calling for me to work on it, I guess. And I thought there was something really interesting about the difference in philosophies between her mother and Minnie, that her mother kind of has this philosophy that...
And Minnie's your protagonist.
Minnie is the protagonist, the teenage girl. Her mother is Charlotte, played by Kristen Wiig, in an amazing performance. But that Charlotte sort of has this worldview that your self-worth is wrapped up in what a man thinks of you. And she subtly and not so subtly throughout the whole movie is sort of giving Minnie this lesson that Minnie is absorbing and at times buying into, and by the end has to really recognize that's not what I believe. And she grows beyond her mom. She grows past her.
That's certainly there, but I also think, too, and this is what fascinates you so much about the idea of being seen is what an adult is, which is a really unusual sort of thing to build this around.
Yeah.
That's not so much a part of the graphic novel. It really is about, it's more about her point of view, and it gets to be about all these other characters and where they intersect.
It's an immature way of looking at the world in some ways, of like, I need to be seen, I need other people to validate me. And I think there's something about the 70s in San Francisco, too, where it was a lot of people who were searching in their lives, who were either like trying out kind of all different kinds of religion and trying out things like EST, like the character of Monroe tries EST in the movie.
Or, you know, we see the transgender people walking around. And
the
idea of everybody looking to be something other than what they are.
There's the Rocky Horror scene where people are kind of finding their fellow freaks, and people are kind of exploring. And there's like there's sort of just this, I think San Francisco is a place where a lot of people who didn't fit into their real lives in the Midwest or whatever went and tried to find other people who were like them in San Francisco. But I think there is this weird thing of these sort of stunted adults who all came together in San Francisco who are all searching. We talked a lot about the three main characters, Monroe, Minnie, and Charlotte, all kind of being 15.
Monroe being her mom's boyfriend.
Her mother's boyfriend, yeah. That they're all sort of emotionally 15. They're all searching. They're all wanting to be seen. I think that's a good way of putting it. And for whatever reason, they are not feeling fulfilled in that way. And Minnie's the only one who sort of succeeds in growing.
It's funny because I almost think of her mom and even Monroe to some extent being more like infantile.
Yeah.
She's the actual teenager.
For sure. For sure. I think you recognize throughout the story that age is definitely just a number. That just because you're technically an adult, that doesn't mean you have life figured out.
But I guess I want to talk too a little bit how a lot of it's really funny, and there is a kind of a tragic cast to the graphic novel, but she comes out of it.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a lot of it that's really funny.
I agree.
And why do you think people aren't talking about that?
I don't know. I think people are a little bit scared maybe of the subject matter, so they want to take it very seriously. But I think there's a lot of humor in it too. I think a lot of the humor comes from just the truth of the logic that we have as teenagers too. There's a line that Minnie says in the movie that's like, I didn't know if I wanted to have sex with him or not, but I didn't want to pass up the chance because I may never get another. And I find that so funny.
Which I laughed out loud when I heard that. And at Sundance, I left. I looked around. People were just grabbing the backs of their chairs. Like, oh, maybe it's just me.
Well, I've been pleased that, especially when we've shown it in big festival audiences, we've actually gotten a lot of laughs. When we were in Berlin, I mean, they were dying laughing.
Oh, really?
Which I found funny because I thought a lot of the humor was really American specifically, but they got it. But I love that part of what we're laughing at, they're not, you know, set up jokes kind of, but there's a recognition in that teenage logic or that kind of the flawed ideas that we have when we're a teenager, and we can all relate to those of like, oh no, I felt that way too, or I had those same thoughts. It's so painful, but it's so funny.
We're talking about comedy and vulnerability with my guest, writer-director Mariel Heller. Her first film as writer-director is Diary of a Teenage Girl, is The Treatment. But that idea of comedy being in these most awful circumstances, because you could have played it much broader mm-hmm. and made her the butt of the jokes, and she's not.
Oh, never, never. It was so important to me that we were never exploiting this character. We were never laughing at her. We're always in her experience. And I think that makes it funnier in some ways. We can remember what it really felt like to have those thoughts and we have plenty of examples of movies that I think kind of laugh at teenagers. And I don't know. I wanted to honor her. I wanted to respect her and respect her voice enough that we were not doing that.
Your love of the material certainly comes across. And I guess I find myself, as I was watching it, thinking, I wanted to see more of this. I didn't want it to end there, because there's that second book.
A Child's Life.
Yeah.
Actually, that book came out first. That was a book that Phoebe worked on for a long time, and it's more written as sort of, it's more like a real graphic novel, whereas this book, The Diary of a Teenage Girl, is sort of a hybrid. It's got diary entries that look like
text
typed,
blocks.
Then it's got full-page illustrations, and it's got comic book sections. But A Child's Life is a very different book. It's a lot darker in many ways.
Well, it's funny, because when I first heard you talk about this, I just thought, wow, this is a pretty dark, almost bleak piece of material, because she's, I guess the difference is she's looking for hope, and here she's looking for contact.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
She's definitely looking for contact.
And not just with physical contact, but contact with the world.
Definitely. She wants to be seen and held and felt and loved in the way I think we all do. I think that's a really universal part of it.
It's funny you said Berlin. I find myself thinking, it reminds me a lot. I don't know if you ever saw Cabaret.
No.
Or any of the Christopher Isherwood stories. But that sense of Berlin being this place of all kinds of possibilities, the Weimar Republic, Berlin, that's kind of what that San Francisco feels like to me.
Well, I think about that with the musical Passing Strange, because they have that sequence where they go to Berlin, and it's that same thing of finding your people, finding your fellow freaks, or whatever you want to call it.
But that sort of centered the city being a city in transition and being a place unlike any other place.
Definitely. Well, I grew up in the Bay Area. I grew up in the East Bay, in Berkeley and Alameda,
but those are different places than San Francisco.
They are, but Berkeley has its own culture too, and you have this sense that the 60s and the remnants of the 60s are just so present there. Like, I grew up in the 80s, not in the 70s really, but that feeling of like, oh, you missed the best time in the world. The 60s were the best time in the world, and we're just trying to get back there a little bit. But it's had a lasting effect on the whole culture of the place, I think. There's a real value put on being really open-minded and on trying anything. And there's a lot of parenting that is pretty lax there.
Well, between her mom and her dad, this idea that both of them wanting to be recognized for not being traditional parents and to be saluted for that, there's a sad comedy in that, too.
There is a sad comedy in that. There is this sense that they feel proud of themselves for being open-minded, for not being the way their own parents probably were, which was really close-minded and square. And they place a value on being, and that can go too far. You know, it can be, you're trying to be so cool, so open-minded, such a PC parent that you're not parenting at all, that you're really more of, you know, asking your kid to parent you.
But which is kind of what's happening here. And I think for me, that's where a lot of the comedy is in this. Mm. And I just, in reading some of these things, I just, knowing you a little bit, is thinking, how do you keep a straight face when people are so serious with you?
It's true. It's funny. You are one of the first people who's talked to me about the comedy of it, which is funny. Although I love when I have audiences who crack up at it. A funny story, my editors were Belgian. And they were amazing editors. Marie-Hélène Dozo, who does the Dardenne Brothers movies, and she's an incredible editor. But when we did our very first Friends and Family screening of the movie, she turned to me and she said, I had no idea this movie was so funny. But it was such a funny moment. I teased her about it for months.
Well, I think, too, one of the things I sort of got, especially when you talk to women about it, is they feel such a sense of responsibility. They feel so protective of Minnie.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
It's true. I think when you have so few characters that you feel like actually represent something honestly, there's almost more pressure on that character to be everything. Minnie's a really specific character. She's not every girl necessarily at all. She's in a very specific situation and in a very specific time in the 70s in San Francisco, such a specific culture. But I think almost in that specificity, we can kind of see ourselves in her. And the people like me, that's how I felt about her when I read the book. I felt like, she's me. This isn't my story. I didn't sleep with my mother's boyfriend or anything like that. But I just felt like, oh, I love her. She's me. I've never had a character like this before. And you do feel this sense of responsibility. you want that to be taken in the right way. You want people to see her and recognize her.
But I think for a lot of people, and I guess what I ask you, because I find that women, even probably women close to your own age, some of these things I read, feel very maternal about her.
That's interesting. It's been an interesting thing talking to women who have their own teenage daughters and are like sort of conflicted between, I remember what it was like to have these feelings and to be a teenage daughter, but I also, to be a teenage girl, but I also have a teenage daughter. And how do I deal with those conflicting feelings? I've been pleased when I see women who have teenage daughters, though, who are really willing to let their daughters go see this movie and talk about it. I have a friend on Facebook, someone I've known my whole life, who has a teenage daughter, and she put something on Facebook saying, I just saw this movie and it's amazing. And her teenage daughter wrote, I can't believe you saw it without me. And she wrote back and said, I don't think I want to see it with you, but go see it with your friends and then we'll talk about it.
We'll take a break. Oh, my God. We'll take a break and talk about breasts. My guest, who's giving me all kinds of permission here, is the director of the terrific first film, Diary of a Teenage Girl, Mariel Heller. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW's popular iPad Music Mine app is now available for the iPhone. From quick discovery to deep exploration, take KCRW music with you wherever you go. Download at kcrw.com/musicmine.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. We're talking about breasts, sort of. My guest is Mariel Heller. Her first film as writer-director is the adaptation of the graphic novel Diary of a Teenage Girl. And one of the things I really like about the film, too, and I think people are so caught up in it emotionally, they have a hard time talking about it as a film, is the visual confidence. You know, those scenes on the boat. And inside any place is a bedroom, it becomes a different place. And talk about creating that kind of that ambience where suddenly everything seems really kind of vulnerable. It's almost always a mirror in the bedroom somewhere, so you're aware that some part of you're seeing some part of yourself you don't want to see.
That's so interesting. I love that. You know, making a movie set in the 70s is sort of a visual feast anyway, but also telling a story.
But you can go overboard.
You can really go overboard.
And people often do that.
And we were really conscientious that we didn't want to do the costume party version of the 70s, that you didn't want it to be something that felt false. And the Bay Area in 1976 is so different from Ohio in 1976. It's got its, very much its own style and culture, and it needed to be tied to character. So I worked with incredible collaborators. My production designer, Jonah Markowitz, and my DP, Brandon Trost, both understood in a really sensitive way what this story was about and how every scene needed to be about Minnie's emotional state more than anything else.
So there's so much kind of gold and brown in it to sort of deal with that?
Yeah, definitely. We kind of came up with a whole color scheme, but everything was always, the conversation always came back to, where is Minnie emotionally in this moment? What is she experiencing? If she's looking at Monroe's apartment and it's, she thinks it's amazing, then that's kind of how we should see it in that moment. And if in another moment she looks at it and she's like, oh no, is this guy a loser? Then we need to kind of see it in that light.
Because at that point, the place suddenly seems incredibly small and shabby.
Yeah, exactly. But when she first sees it, it's like, ooh, a grown-up's apartment. How exciting. But yeah, so everything is through her eyes. And that was just the mantra through the whole filmmaking process, from everything from costumes to the animation to the production design, was like, always checking back in with this character and where she is emotionally and just letting this really live in her mind's eye.
Well, I mean, I think I just find it so interesting that mirrors are around so often. There's often something awful that happens with a mirror in a movie. And so it kind of sets up this weird sense of dread. And it becomes
this thing
where, if for her, mirrors are things that where she's really literally the most naked sometimes.
Yeah, my favorite scene in the movie, I think, is her standing naked in front of the mirror examining her body, because I think it's something all of us have done at some point in our lives when your body starts to change and you're starting to think of yourself in a sexual way. Standing totally naked in front of the mirror and examining yourself and imagining someone else looking at your body, it's such a vulnerable thing. And it's so something you would only do totally alone. So capturing this feeling of what it really is to be a girl totally alone in her room, it was a really tricky thing. But I love that scene. And I feel like Belle gives this incredible performance where she just lets us totally observe herself observing herself.
Yeah. And I think that idea of finding somebody who, from the look of her, as a kind of look that's a little too grown up for a boy in some ways. I mean, she doesn't look like the kind of beauty that a teenage boy would seek out, which explains why they're kind of afraid of her, but why a grown man could appreciate something like that.
Yeah, she's sort of more interesting and unique than most boys would be used to, and doesn't know how beautiful she is.
And that idea of her scaring boys, too, that her not recognizing her power.
Well, let me tell you, that is something that every woman I know relates to, pretty much, of like, oh, that moment where suddenly you've kind of exceeded beyond the boys. You're growing faster than they are, and boys are scared of you. And that's, I don't think we ever talk about that in our society, of like teenage boys being a little bit afraid of sex or afraid, and girls often mature before boys do. But why isn't that the narrative? Why don't we ever talk about that?
That's one of the things I do want to just point out here, because I think people should know that it is funny.
I appreciate it. I think so, too. And I, you know, from the moment the movie starts, it's like the first line of the movie is, I had sex today. And she has this huge smile over her face. And it gets a really big laugh because it's like, oh, right. She feels really great about this newfound experience.
But I want to talk to you, too, about the way you shoot the interiors, because each place, I mean, her mom's place, which is almost this kind of scary biker bar in some weird way. Some of these places, you get a sense of her comfort there, and some places seem really scary in the way they would to a kid.
Yeah, and that's, too grown up almost.
Yeah, and that's what interesting visual sort of thing you do to confer on this effect that she's not a grown person.
Yeah.
That there are places that scare her.
Definitely. And that she has this real safe zone, which is her bedroom, which you never see anybody else in her bedroom until the moment when her mother kind of breaks her trust and comes into her bedroom and starts snooping around. But you have this sense that there's this one place that she feels safe. And in the rest of the world, she's sort of testing out her place in the world. She's experimenting and trying on being a grown up a little bit, or trying on even like she's trying on like being one of the kids who goes to Rocky Horror with her friend, and she's wearing too much makeup, and it's all a little bit scary. But I think that's part of what we all go through with being teenagers, is kind of venturing one step, two steps too far, and then pulling back a little bit and going, oh, I don't think we should have done that.
Which is why I think it's important to have somebody who has so much emotional life in her eyes in the movie.
I mean, she just is incredible. She has this face. We sort of picked our entire lens package, actually, based on how her face looked with this one lens, one close-up lens, because we shot anamorphically, and we had this...
Is that why you... Okay.
Sure. Yeah, and we had this one close-up lens that it just sucked you in. When you looked at her face on this lens, it was like you just wanted to watch everything. It pulled you closer, and you could see every little pore, and so you felt like you were just right with her. And yet it was just this beautiful look. And anyway, we based the whole lens package on that.
Which is why when the animation stuff shows up, it's so fun. It has a kind of a flatness.
Yeah.
That the rest of, I mean, it's even like almost exaggerated flatness in the perspectives. Some of that comes from Eileen Kaminsky and Robert Crumb, the way they drew anyway, because they exaggerate that flatness. But also you're using that as a way to sort of be an emotional marker for her too.
Definitely. Well, I think it's really based on the 70s underground comic book movement that was happening in San Francisco at the time. And there's such a crudeness, a flatness.
An exaggerated cartoonishness, because they were basically rebelling against illustration and even comic book illustration.
Exactly. There was a grotesqueness that they were trying to kind of...
Because you see from Kaminsky's or Crumb's fine artwork, and it's very different from that.
Definitely. And I think Minnie's exploring how to deal with these very grown-up things that are happening in her life by kind of going in that kind of direction with her artwork, too. She's expressing herself through that medium, and it is flat and at times grotesque, and she sees herself as like a big giant with big thighs and hairy legs, and you know, that's really real. It's more emotional. It's less realistic drawing. It's much more from an emotional place and in a teenager place.
And also that thing you get so much from Crumb, and a little, maybe the difference between Crumb and Kaminsky is that there's that fear of everything, which is why everything is so big. And so many of his male characters are often so small.
Yeah, he's like afraid, terrified of women in his drawings. Yeah.
And for her, this is kind of pride in being, for Kaminsky, this pride in being bigger.
Yeah, you know, this drawing of Kaminsky's that we play with in the movie is her her cartoon version of herself sitting on the toilet looking at a mirror, and in the mirror her face is extra grotesque, and just how revolutionary that was to see, even like to have a drawing of a woman on a toilet, first of all, but also like dealing with her own issues. It's so complex and it's so great. Everything about it is vulnerable, and I love it.
My guest, who's not afraid of the grotesque, is Marielle Heller. Her first film as writer-director is a terrific adaptation of Diary of a Teenage Girl. Talk to me about your first conversation with your lead, the first time you talked to Belle, what that was like, the first time you guys were face-to-face.
So Belle Powley's British, which is amazing when you see her in the movie.
And then with the conversation after at Sundance, oh my God.
Because nobody had realized she was British. I loved that. So we sat down together in New York. I brought her to New York so she and Alexander could get in a room together and I could see whether it was going to work. And the three of us ended up having the most amazing, like, four-hour working session where we sat down with scenes of the movie and we talked through them and we worked through them. And her willingness to be vulnerable and to go to all of the dark, deep places that the character needed to go were what just sold me on her. But we talked a lot about how we related to this character. I think she and I both felt in some ways just like we are Minnie, and she felt so connected to this character as well and loved her in a way that it was almost like Minnie became this external force outside of even the book, outside of Phoebe, outside of me, outside of Belle. But Minnie was like this little external teenage girl that we wanted to protect, that we loved. And she and I would talk about who Minnie was as almost this separate entity. I don't know, it's kind of weird. But yeah, and so we really connected about, I think, feeling like we had never had a character that we felt so connected to in our hearts. And I loved that. When you have a passion project like this that you've been working on as long as I've been working on this project, you hope the people you work with are going to love it as much as you do, I guess.
But I think people do love it. Not only love it, but in a way I think is kind of unusual, because so many Sundance movies are about sort of first experiences and about, you know, these sort of coming of age stories. And this kind of, in the end, finally really isn't a coming of age story because, I mean, she still hasn't grown up yet.
No, it's just the beginning. I mean, she's got a far way to go.
Was there some resistance to that idea that, you know, when you showed it around, people said, well, no, we got to see this thing that where we understand that she realizes she's a different person by the end, because she's certainly matured, but she's not a different person.
No.
Or not a wildly different person by any means.
No, no. I guess maybe early on when I was first working on the script, people had the instinct to try and kind of get it to fall into the Hollywood tropes where by the end, her mother has become a great mother and she's become a totally different kid and everything is all wrapped up in a bow. And that just was always an indication to me that I shouldn't be working with those people, I guess, because it was so not what I wanted this movie to ever do. It would never have felt right. It needed to just feel like there's hope at the end, but there's hope in a realistic way, in the way life is. You know, everybody doesn't just change all of a sudden when an experience happens. You know, her mom at the end, they're able to see each other. They're able to see each other as people. But ultimately, like one of the last scenes of the movie, her mom turns to her and says, if anyone asks, we're sisters. It's like she's still who she is. She has not become Mother of the Year.
The thing that reminds me about you in the movies is a sense of daring in it. Like,
yeah.
Because you're always willing to sort of shove somebody and see if they're going to shove back or not. And then the movie does a lot of that.
Yeah.
And it's a really, you're blushing. I'm sorry.
I am, no.
I don't mean to call you out on this, but there's
it's
a sense.
It's true.
There's a sense of, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? To this movie. And I think that for people who haven't seen it yet, that's not in the stuff I've
been
seeing.
But that's refreshing, right?
Completely. But again, I think that's one of the things that doesn't come across. There's this real sense of impertinence in the movie, you know?
Well, I hope it's just honesty, you know? I think we're just afraid of being fully honest in movies. And there's something really refreshing about being like, wow, that just kept pushing and it was honest. And I do think that's something that Minnie has. She has this kind of sense of pushing a little bit and testing the boundary.
It's a really smart, fun movie, and I'm so glad you came here to talk about it.
Thank you. I so appreciate it.
My pleasure. My blushing guest, I've never used that phrase before, is writer-director Mary O'Hara. Her first film as writer-director, she's face down on the console now, is Diary of a Teenage Girl. Recording engineer at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by Kat Hurd. It's edited by associate producer Blake Veit. I'm not blushing at all. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. That I